Hello, welcome to the 5280 podcast. Strap on and have a good time.
Live from the 5280 Studios, Weekend Geek Update Special Report. Smurf here with, this is personally something on my bucket list. This is one that I've been going for a number of years, and it's not very often I get to talk to someone, well, I can't say that I want to talk to, but I've actually chased down this gentleman. I have tried to get him multiple times, but as I told him, it's like trying to get the Barrowman. There are always a sea of nerds around you.
That happens some.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Butcher is joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Jim, you are to the sci-fi world what Stephen King is to horror. You have a plethora of stories out there. I do have to say that I am sorry to see Dresden Files not get renewed. What happened? Did you cry? I did.
Oh, the TV show?
Yes!
Oh, I like to think of it, I like my glasses to be half full most of the time, so I like to think of it as, well, the show went off the air, but at least it went off the air before they could irretrievably wreck anything, you know, so.
So before they could supernatural it, you actually got out of there with the story the way you wanted. How much control did you have over the TV show?
Oh, absolutely none. No contractual authority whatsoever. I mean, essentially, it was like, oh, and we've got your name on the dotted line. Right. Out the door. Thank you, author, person. We don't need you anymore.
Thank you. We appreciate your contribution.
Yeah. The only way I managed to have any influence on the show at all was I actually made friends with Robert Wolf, who was the guy on the ground who was directing it.
Yes.
And, you know, I got to sit down and talk with him, and he, you know, he did a lot of stuff on DS9, and I was always like, hey, you know, I just wanted to check in with you. You modeled that on the Founders, right? Because you've got your Roman centurions and your little Greek advisors, and then your actual Roman citizens, you know, that are running around. It's like, that was all modeled on Rome, right? He's like, oh my God, yes, it was exactly modeled on Rome.
Waha!
And then we sat down. I was like, have you ever run a Roman era D&D game? He's like, oh my God, yes, that's so awesome, right? Trying to explain Lupercalia to people is just, there's no explaining that.
No, that's kind of a wall most of the time.
Yeah. even if you know about it, you can hardly understand it. But anyway, we kind of vibed on that. And so after that, we actually, you know, it turned out that we got along pretty well, and he would actually call me and talk to me about things. I mean, obviously, we do very different jobs, so there's not like a whole lot of things I could advise him on. But when he would call me about story stuff, I'd be like, yeah, let's talk about that. Or this is how this aspect of the universe, you know, the magic of the universe works, or whatever. So that turned out okay.
So, I mean, you can still get together for D&D night, right? Right.
Oh, I wish I could. That would be a lot of fun. Oh my gosh. No, but he lives in Hollywood. Hollywood is a very, nothing happens, everything happens all at once sort of place, which it looks really weird from the outside. And when you experience it, it's really strange. But I can only imagine that living on the inside, you're always in the everything happens all at once zone.
It's kind of hard to catch your breath that way.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a difficult way to live. That's something that you got to do a lot of work and really love to go and do.
To immerse yourself in. Yeah. So what are you currently working on? I mean, what's your project load look like right now?
I just finished the last short story for the next short story anthology, which is going to be called Briefcases. And we're doing contracts for it now, and that always takes time because lawyers are involved.
Oh, of course.
And
they have to earn their paychecks.
Yeah, exactly. But that will be out sometime next year. Penguin will have some kind of press release for it once everything's signed and all the I's are dotted and everything. So that's done. And now I'm at work on Peace Talks so that I can get that done. I mean, I'm gonna finish that. I'm going to finish that before the fall's over, and then so that'll be out not too long after the short story anthology.
Wow. How do you keep all the worlds and stories straight? I mean, what does your board look like? Mine's kind of empty at the moment. I just finished something, but I mean, yours has got to be wild.
Well, I mean, at this point, I like go over to, you know, the fans made a wiki, and they are so much more into this story than I am. I'm just the guy writing it, you know. But I mean, if you've ever read Ender's Game, you know, in Ender's Game, they postulate that That you play games harder than you do anything else.
It's true.
Which is why they have the kids play essentially playing games and not telling them they're actually fighting a war. And it's sort of the same thing for writers and audiences, because for the audience, you know, it's for you guys, it's your fun, it's your game. For me, it's work. I got to do it every day. You know, Harry Dresden is this guy that you get to run into once in a while and you spend this wild weekend with, and you're like, oh, Harry Dresden, what a great guy.
I love Harry.
Now, for me,
great.
He's like my annoying roommate I have to put up with, like, all the time.
Is he a good sort of roommate? I mean, does he leave clothes lying around? I mean,
oh,
what kind of roommate?
God, no.
He's the worst, as someone is mouthing to me.
He is the worst. I'm always, yeah, he's always got all these messes, and I have to plot my way through all of them and find which one is the messiest and most painful for the reader. and all the different bad choices he could make. Sometimes I feel like doing a video, The Thousand Deaths of Harry Dresden, you know, because that would work. Just all the dumb things he's done that got him killed, and I had to go, no, I have to write this slightly differently. But a cartoon of it would just be hilarious.
Yeah, you need to do that.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That's right up there, the D&D game.
Yeah, yeah.
Harry Dresden D&D game.
What we need is like an animated series, maybe like on Netflix or something, and then at the end of every episode, while the credits are rolling, you know, you
cast
play,
your vote.
You play all the ways in that episode that he could have died horribly and just kind of didn't. You know, just kind of have him stop and have one of those,
like a gag reel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, or kind of have one of those Dirk moments from Dragon's Lair, where he looks back and forth, and then the story goes on, and then at the end you show when he chose the wrong way and how he died awfully and comedically,
just painful.
Yeah, yeah,
it's awesome.
That'd be fun.
How much control do you have over the comic? Is that still yours, or is someone still?
And I work with him pretty closely. Essentially, the way the comic works is that I will sit down and outline a story. It's usually a story that I wanted to put in a book somewhere, but was either too small or too simple a story to really be included, or for some other reason I just couldn't fit it in. But there's all these other things that Dresden is doing in my head that don't come out in the series, because those only really cover just the worst weekend of his year.
Right.
Basically, the books. I mean,
it's a bad bender.
Worst weekend, that's what I'm going to write the story about this year. but he also has, you know, bad days and bad weekends during the rest of that year, and so I like to throw in these stories as part of it. And so those go into the short stories in the comics. And so what happens is I'll write up an extensive outline. I'll say, okay, here's issue one. Here's the overstory. Here's issue one. We're going to cover this part. We're going to cliffhang it like this. Here's issue two. We're going to cover this part. We're going to cliffhang it like that. I like the cliffhangers. And
of course.
And here's how we're going to do the story. And then I've got a team of beta readers who essentially read over the art and everything like that and try and keep it as faithful as possible to the books as it's going along. I work with artists. When they switch artists, they'll come out with three or four new people and say, hey, which of these people do you want to work with? And
right.
And I'll have to look at all their stuff and so on.
Throw a dart. But
I will write up all the outlines and the story things and then say here and then, you know, whatever else you need. And they'll check with me. They send me scripts and I read over the scripts and say, okay, fix this or don't fix that.
Nice.
But generally speaking, I mean, it's worked out really well, because I tried writing a comic book script, and that was...
It's hard to write panel by panel, isn't it?
It is. I don't know if you ever saw the script I wrote, but the model that I used, because I was just like, oh, I got to pick a comic book script and figure out how to write these. Who do I use for an example? Oh, Neil Gaiman, obviously. And I went and grabbed one of his scripts. One of the scripts from like one of the early issues of Sandman. It was Death's first appearance.
Oh, okay.
And I'm reading over that, and he's got all this super specific direction and everything like that for the artist. And so I was just like, oh, well, man, no wonder writing comic books is so hard. I mean, this a picture's worth 1,000 words, and I've got to write 1,000 words for every picture. There's like 6 pictures on every page.
No one said I had to pour in the words.
Yeah,
Damn it. Exactly.
And I was getting comments like, well, Jim, you can't have the characters talk to each other like this. And I'm like, why not? And they're like, well, if there's this much dialogue, there's no room for pictures, and then it's not a graphic novel, it's a novel.
And perhaps, is that how that works?
Perhaps this format is not best served by that sort of storytelling. Oh, I guess you must be right.
Okay.
But so these days we work, there's an actual graphics novel professional script writer that works with me, and And then I do the story, a little bit of the direction, and I'll go in through and add in some extra snark occasionally. So,
do you have an end game or end goal for the Dresden Files? Do you know how it ends?
Oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Well,
he's like, oh yeah. You look like you're ready for like a vacation almost when you say, oh yeah.
I know all the big stuff, like all the huge events and all the big story things. There's a lot of things that I'm not sure about yet, like Dresden's disposition at the end of this story, because I'm just not seeing how he lives through it all. And he kind of hasn't already once, so that's not a good indicator.
No, that's not a good. You know what? I actually kind of praise the stories where the hero dies in the end. I mean, I am a fan of the end. The hero dies, and everyone else is kind of like. I mean, it does turn him into a martyr, but you're like,
In the real world,
that's kind of how it goes.
Being a hero frequently involves you getting killed.
Yes,
I mean, that's and kind of how one of the ways we know you were a hero.
That's right, and when you make stupid mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so I mean, it's fun doing it. It's fun working in the different mediums, and it's fun getting to see other people take some of my stuff and play with it a bit, and especially the artists, because they can do the visual thing and I can't. I tried to learn art. I tried hard.
My stick figures look deformed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if there's a series or a title out there that you could write for, what'd it be? Who was it that you would like, you know what, can I get a hold of this and really just turn it on its head?
Oh, I don't know. I might enjoy the heck out of Star Wars. If I was doing something like that. I mean, if they were like, Jim, we need you to write episodes, you know, 8 and 9. Okay.
What would that picture look like?
I would say that I would want to work on Spider-Man, except the guys that did this most recent Spider-Man did everything I would have done to the character in that.
Really?
I'm watching that going, oh my gosh, you understand now. Peter Parker is the Charlie Brown of comic books. And you get that, because things were just, I mean, and they just had all these running jokes, like his poor smartphone. You know, he starts off the show with a new smartphone, and then it's cracked even more, and by the end of it, he's like holding it up like this, trying to read it through all the cracks as it slowly gets more destroyed. And it's like, it's just emblematic of that's how Peter Parker should be treated. I love that about the show.
Well, and that, I mean, hailing to the comics, it is, Parker suffers from syndromes, problems that everyday people have, which they haven't been able to do, and I think it is a better representation. Now, were you happy that they decided to go with Peter instead of Miles Morales?
Yeah, because I mean that's my original Spider-Man. That's when I grew up. That's what I grew up with. Peter Parker was, you know, I was a nerdy high school kid, and Peter Parker was a nerdy high school kid, and you know, I enjoyed the hell out of that. It meant a lot to me, you know, as I was 13, 14, 15, reading Spider-Man, trying to figure out how to be a reasonable human being, which I didn't. But I'm kind of functional, though, you know, so, you know.
Abby normal.
For somebody who makes a living writing down the conversations of his imaginary friends, you know, I'm absolutely stable. Yeah.
I am absolutely. So I'll ask one more question about Spider-Man. Did you like the end? Would you have made that choice for him? Without giving away the final scene?
Oh, we're way past the hey, watch the spoilers stage of that now. That movie's
been
out for
months. Would you have stayed? Would you have did the same choice that Peter did?
You mean if I was writing it?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. I mean the only thing that I think that they gave him that I probably wouldn't have was the ride along best friend. A chair guy?
Yes. Pudgy Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and because, I mean, Spidey is supposed to be alone, but at the same time, it's easier to write somebody alone in a book or even in a comic book than it is on screen. Because if people are alone on screen, it's quiet. Nothing is happening.
Well, there's no dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to have my writing teacher called it the joy of idiocy. Which is the idea of having a character along who is an idiot and has to have things explained to him. Because that way you can explain things to the audience without making them feel like an idiot. Because you've already got a stand-in idiot doing the job.
Doing it for you. And I did like the talking costume. I mean, that actually...
Yeah, yeah,
that
exactly.
Really, I mean, kind of tripped
and that was something
it for
that they
me.
Needed for the movie for exactly the same reason. You know, because otherwise, there's Peter alone by himself all the time.
Trying to figure out how to use his web shooter.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like watching a kid try and fumble through a Japanese video game with no instructions, you know. And that would not have been fun. But having the suit talk to him and be, you know, would you like me to go to instant kill mode? No! Would you just knock off the instant kill mode?
Now, you said Star Wars. Have you been impressed with what's going on with the Star Wars world right now? I mean, you grew up with Star Wars, obviously.
Yeah. Well, no, Star Wars was the movie trilogy.
Right.
You know, that was the movie. You know, the story. I was 7 years old when it was the first PG movie I ever got to go see. My sister snuck me into Star Wars at age 7. When Empire Strikes Back came out, my sisters actually went into school, told my teacher I had a dentist appointment, then blindfolded me and hooded me and kidnapped me and drove me to Empire Strikes Back.
That is some awesome sisters right there.
There was some excellent sistering. There was some excellent sistering happening there. I mean, it was important to me. And so, I'm watching the new Star Wars, and I am deeply suspicious of everything and everyone about the new Star Wars. Well, I guess that's okay. Well, this was it. This was all right. That's acceptable. I'll live with that. Yeah. I've been fairly happy with it. I think Rogue One was kind of a departure because it was sort of its own thing, and it sort of forgot that you're supposed to have fun at Star Wars.
It was rather Halo Reach at the end there. It was like, oh my god!
Everybody's gonna die now. I really wanted a better death for the droid.
I don't know. He went out like a blaze of glory.
I cried on that one.
You
know what I really wanted was for the droid to be the one who survived and got up to the ship, and then to have him turn and slow Vader down just enough in that hallway scene. A super awesome Imperial combat droid. Because come on, it's Star Wars. If there's an awesome character who's going to get killed, Vader's the guy who kills them. That's how it needs to happen. You know?
Again, everyone had their ass handed to him right in that scene,
They just started playing. I mean, it's just suddenly the dark hallway gets even darker, and they start playing Exorcist music, and then the red lightsaber. It's like, oh, that is the Darth Vader we've always wanted to see. It's like, I thought I was watching a war movie. I'm watching a demonic possession movie is what's happening right now.
And
that's awesome.
It redeems your faith in Vader, because the nancification of Vader at the end of Revenge of the Sith, you're just like, oh, you freaking baby.
Yeah, it saves him from that no.
Yes, the temper tantrum.
I just have the giant red no button website. That's a hotkey on my browser now, so I can, whenever I'm particularly frustrated, I can go to that and just punch no over
no.
and over.
What do you want to see the most out of the next Star Wars film?
I already got. I mean, from the first one, all I really wanted to see out of The Force Awakens was I wanted Finn when he was they had the shot of him picking up the lightsaber,
right.
And when Finn picked up that lightsaber, I was like, please God, don't let him be a Jedi. Let him be some schmuck who's standing in the wrong place at the right time and happens to have a lightsaber and is just going to do the right thing even if it kills him. And they actually had him do it, and I was like, oh my God, that's just what I wanted. That's amazing.
Well, and it's what needed to happen.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and how he comes out of the coma, I'm sure we'll. But he shouldn't be coming back after that.
It would have been cooler if he just. I mean, I think it would have been a more powerful statement if he just died there. But
yes.
That was all so well done.
So, what do you have coming up next? What are you currently working on? Your next few projects coming? Or?
And there's more interest in going to a big or small screen. So we'll see if any of that pans out. I mean, it's Hollywood, so mostly nothing happens.
Well, I mean, is a Dresden Files possible for the big screen?
Sure. I mean, it could be done. I would much rather see it. I would much rather see it as a Netflix bingeable thing, where you could do an entire, you know, like an entire novel or even two novels as a season of story, and just sort of take like a couple of novels and then blend all the nastiness all together. Instead of having just one novel at a time coming at him, have two novels at a time coming at him, one each season, and you could just make it so much more hectic and over the top that way if you really wanted to.
Do you think the new genre, the new breakthrough, is binge TV? I mean, it's kind of where it's going.
Well, what it does do is it lets you tell more and different kinds of stories that you just couldn't tell at other places. Stuff that when you've got everybody when you've got all the story together and you can watch it all together, you it gives you a different level of focus that you can use in terms of how much story actually gets told. Because, I mean, if you've only got your 42 minutes of screen time, which is what your average, you know, drama has, your TV drama has, then you've got a very limited sort of, I mean, you're working with a sonnet there. You've got a kind of a rigid format you've got to stay within. But if you've got something where you can drag things off longer and make, you know, big storylines that take two or three or four episodes, I mean, you can't do that with a regular show. But you can totally do that on Netflix, and nobody will even notice. They'll just go, "Wow, that this part of the show was particularly
that really
awesome.
Worked."
Yeah, that worked really well.
When you were growing up, who were your big influences? What were you thinking when you were age 7? Besides how cool your sisters were, I mean, where were you?
Well, I mean, I grew up reading. I got sick. I got strep throat, and my sisters went up to Barnes & Noble, and they each bought me a box set of books. And so they came home with the Han Solo trilogy by Brian Daley, which was already out.
Excellent.
And then they came home with the primary color box set Lord of the Rings, the one where you know, the Hobbit's in yellow, yeah. and Lord of the Rings or Fellowship's in
Fellowship.
Blue, and then red, and then yeah, or blue or green, and then red. And so that was where I got started, and there, and with the Chronicles of Prydain, and with which are still amazing books. Those are so rereadable. With all the Narnia books, the Jungle Book. I mean, that was what I was reading for my fantasy stuff when I was a kid. And then Dragonlance Chronicles came along, and fantasy went a little bit more mainstream. You know, along came Elfstones and several other books that were like it. And so, I mean, that was where I got started. And watching movies, it's like, oh, yes, I can watch Aliens. That was the most amazing movie. And then somebody later pointed out, oh, it was one of the first action heroine movies in science fiction. And I was like, it was? Oh, yeah, I guess it was. I didn't really realize it.
I just saw aliens eating humans. That's all I really cared about.
Yeah, that was an awesome soldier movie that happened to have aliens in it. One of the reasons I love Dog Soldiers, if you haven't seen that one, that's one of the better werewolf movies they've made lately, which is instead of a soldier movie with aliens, is a soldier movie with werewolves. But it's a little bit more brutal on the planet.
A lot more brutal on the planet. Yikes.
Yeah.
Which genre do you think is making more of a bigger comeback right now? Do you think it's sci-fi or do you think it's horror? Because right now it seems like there's a good toss-up, but I'm not sure who's going to win this race.
I think it gets into a really murky area when you're talking about genre titles, because genre titles mostly exist so that bookstores and publishers have a place to sort everything. Genre titles are the labels on the boxes where they toss the manuscripts so that they know who's going to be sold where. But that being said, I don't know. I don't think they've really changed all that much. Horror is going to be with us. I mean, it took a downturn compared to what Stephen King was doing in the 80s, but at the same time, there wasn't nearly as much kind of dark fantasy or urban fantasy in the 80s, and it was writers like King who set that up for the explosion of urban fantasy in the 90s and 2000s. I hope we get more space fiction. I hope we get more, you know, science fiction, because that would be really amazing. And I hope we get to see more of that. We need to look to the future some more.
Well, Star Trek set the tone, and we're kind of caught up to Star Trek. So what's the next?
I know, now that we've got our data pads, I know. I guess writers should get to work or something.
Not like you're a writer or any. You could do this, right?
I've got a science fiction story that I've got about halfway done, but it's been about 8 years since I stopped working on it now, and I left my protagonist having ejected from a ship that's in a decaying orbit over the moon with a solar flare coming on and the fusion core is about to go up on his ship, and he's just in free fall. He's just been there for 8 years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That is one. You kind of sound like Tarantino right now, where he doesn't want to go back to Kill Bill because Beatrice Kiddo is actually having a peaceful life right now.
Yeah,
if he comes back, she's going to get screwed up.
Yeah, I am a dark and sadistic god, and, you know, I do horrible things to my character. So
just kind of leave him there twisted. Jim, the final question for you before you get to your adoring fans who have nicely enough gathered around for your signing here at Barnes & Noble. Of the three villains I'm going to name, which one do you think is the best? Now, you probably have heard me ask your other authors' friends.
Okay.
So you've had time to prepare.
Okay.
Your choices are Tim Curry, Alan Rickman, and Christopher Walken.
Ooh. I've got to go with Alan Rickman based on the strength of Die Hard.
That's the one that always usually wins out.
Yeah.
I mean, because Hans Gruber is hard to beat.
On one end, you've got Hans Gruber, and on the other end, you've got his Sheriff of Nottingham. And just the scene where he just rips off his cloak and just starts slapping some random peasant with it is just it's just so amazing. But I'm gonna go with Rickman because Tim Curry always has his Frankenfurter moment. There's always that moment in any Tim Curry movie where you go, that's Frankenfurter.
That's Frankenfurter, right? Yeah. Well, and the laugh is like unmistakable. You're like, oh, here it comes.
Yeah, yeah. Although they couldn't have picked a better Richelieu for that particular iteration of the Three Musketeers. But and then Walken, you know, I mean, he is a little the same in every movie. Not quite enough New York in there.
No, but you had the stammer right. I'll give you points for that. Or 2 points for that if you're keeping track.
Walken's is hugely more amusing, I think.
Who do you think you'd have the most fun writing for?
Of those three?
Yeah.
Alan Rickman, because it would have to be some kind of ghost Alan Rickman, and that would be awesome. I mean, if Alan Rickman's specter just showed up and started advising me on writing, it's like, yeah, all right, this would be a fine job.
This will be fun.
Now listen, on the set of Die Hard, oh, will you leave off?
I really honestly think him and Jeremy Irons, if they'd teamed up, would rule the world.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, probably, yeah.
We'd all be broke and paying homage to them. Jim, thank you so much. If people want to follow you on the Twitters and the Facebook or to keep up with what your next project is, where do they need to go?
They can look up Jim Butcher on Facebook, and I've got a professional profile there that they can follow. On Twitter, I'm Longshot Author, and there's a little check mark next. It'll say Jim Butcher and has a little check mark next to my name because apparently they verified that I am indeed Jim Butcher.
Well, that's
I don't know
admirable.
How they do that. They never called
know.
Me or
yeah,
anything.
I mean,
they just sort of gave me a check mark one
they
day.
They drop you a note in the mail.
I wonder about their verification process. Although, it was correct, so
it looks like him.
It actually was me, so I guess it worked. But thank you very much,
Jim. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time, ladies and gentlemen. That is Jim Butcher, and be sure to keep up with him on the Facebook because in the end, we're all stories, and this man writes them.